I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are in the house. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020 KDEK.
The Organic Gardeners on the air. We'd love to hear from you at 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDK.com. And the best way to really join us now is to be one of the first callers, folks, that reaches number 10 at 412-922-1020. Because you can take home a $25 gift certificate from Sorgles right now. And speaking of right now, here they are, Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser, your host from TribLive.com. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from the Tribune Review and EverybodyGardens.com.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
And I'm so glad that Miles from Davy Tree is going to be in here today, Jess, talking about insects and diseases because they have found oak wilt in my forest. Yes.
Oh, no.
Yep. The guys from Davy came and I knew it when I saw it, and they came to confirm it, and so we're figuring out what to do.
We'll talk about what you saw so that listeners can look for it.
All the leaves were falling off an oak tree in the middle of the summer.
Right.
And they're
that can be heat stress, too.
Yeah, and they're kind of like a brownish and green.
Ooh.
That's all. That's all I saw. And then some black spotting on the leaves, too. And, they took the leaves back, and then Ron Hegner came out to take a look at it, and didn't even barely have to walk up the driveway and knew that it was oak wilt.
So they didn't
sure.
have to take like a tissue sample or anything like that.
Well, I think technically that did get done. But he just knew from looking at it that this was the problem. And oak wilt is fatal to oak trees. Red oaks, which my forest is filled with, are the most susceptible. And now the question is what to do.
Right.
How many of those trees do you treat with some kind of injection program, which I don't really know what it is, some kind of fungicide? I was thinking that on the one half of it where I think I can stop it from trenching, I'm using a 24-inch deep trench because it spreads through the roots, that I could forest that part, but Allegheny County does not allow that.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like the guys from Davy were telling me, like, well, we got a guy from Butler that would forest it and this and that. He said, no, not in Allegheny County.
What do you mean by forest it?
Have a lumber guy come in.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Harvest
so take the
trees the
wood out.
And
okay.
pay me for them instead of me paying the whatever it is per tree
to have them taken
to
out.
Take down, or do you let them fall? And then I don't know what you do.
This is one of the things.
So we have oak wilt's been actually around for a long time, and it's happened in the forests but it's just become virulent. And so we're thinking it over and figuring out what we're going to do.
And it spreads. So when you use the word virulent, I mean, that's it, right? It spreads as the tree roots grow and they meet each other. So one oak root meets another oak root under the ground. They sort of join or fuse, graft together. And that's how the pathogen moves from one tree to the next. So that trenching can stop that, but that's a big, giant process.
The trenching part is no big deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean,
okay. How wide does the trench have to be?
I don't know how wide it has to be. I know how deep it has to be, 24 to 36. But you just, either rent a trencher or hire a guy with a trencher. And on one side of the drive, this is separated by a driveway, but he thinks that it's already underneath. We'll see.
This is going to be a forest changer, just like the chestnut blight was way long ago, the emerald ash borer recently, and now the oak wilt. And it's a big conundrum that we're in with so many of our trees.
Oh, and I got hemlock woolly adelgia, too, pretty bad.
Oh, lucky
that,
you.
That one I've been able to treat. That one I've been working on with the horticultural oil, and I've really actually made a lot of progress with that.
That's good. Well, when Miles comes in the second half of the show, we're going to talk to him about some other insect and diseases that are with our trees here in western Pennsylvania that you should be on the lookout for this season. I certainly know bagworms are another issue that are cropping up this time of year as well. So lots to talk about with him.
Yeah, and a lot of folks want to talk to these two. We have one line available if you feel the need, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDKA.com. And congratulations to John, winner of that $25 gift certificate from Sorgles.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
Welcome back. I've got a couple different places that I'm going to be coming up this week. Thursday, I will be at the Laurel Highlands Senior Lifestyle Show from 11 to 3 p.m. I'll be speaking at 12 noon and then answering garden questions. That is at the Donegal Community Center, and I've got lots of free seeds to give away. And then this coming Saturday at 11 a.m., I'll be at Osterling's Lawn and Garden Center in Butler, talking about summer garden maintenance. Come out and see me in one of those two places.
It would make sense that you would be at Osterling's.
Yeah, isn't that
right?
Funny?
It's Rick in McKeesia Rocks for Doug and Jess. Good morning, Rick.
Yes, I have a question for you with the tomato blight.
Mm-hmm.
I had it pretty bad, and I was treating it with copper, and it didn't seem to help. Well, last Saturday, I switched to Serenade, and I sprayed three of my tomato plants, and then it looked like it was going to rain, so I figured I'd quit and do it the next day. Well, the next day, the three that I sprayed, they were all wilted. I thought, oh, geez, but none of the other ones were. So during the week, I talked to a buddy of mine. He said that happened one time with him, but they all came back. They mm-hmm. started coming back, and then later this week, yesterday, they're all real wilted. They look like they're ready to die, and it seems to have spread to the other tomato plants, which I didn't even spray with Serenade.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Do you know what that could be?
Yeah, or? So the three that you sprayed with Serenade, do they already have a case of blight that was a little more intense?
No,
okay.
No more than the others.
Okay, and so you're obviously talking about early blight, which is the one that starts on the lower leaves and works its way up.
Correct.
Okay. So sometimes we can have what's called phytotoxicity, which is... It's particular with fungicides, although some other products can cause it as well, where application when the temperature is wrong or the sun is too strong or the plant is stressed by drought or by some other environmental condition, by insects, by disease, and you spray a product on that plant and they can have an adverse reaction to it, just like a person might have an adverse reaction to a particular medicine that you gave them. Plants can have this phytotoxicity too. It can cause temporary wilting. It can cause defoliation. I suspect that might have been what happened. It is not a common occurrence with Serenade.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Never seen that.
But if your plants were stressed out by some other factor,
the fact that some other plants that weren't treated with the Serenade are, you know, showing the signs of this, it's weird, though.
Right, exactly. And all this rain that we keep getting doesn't help.
I don't know what to do.
Right.
What should I do? I haven't sprayed nothing since.
Right. Well, I wouldn't give up on them, certainly, by any means. And I would simply stay the course.
Keep an eye on them.
Yep, keep maintaining them. Remove any diseased foliage very carefully and dispose of it in the garbage.
That's usually what I do.
Yep, yeah. That's good. That's your best line of defense. And always, even with Serenade, keep in mind that it's not going to eliminate an established infection, but it will help keep it from spreading. So, and prevent new infection. So that's the thing. I would just stay the course. I think you just had a little temporary glitch there, and I think everything will wind up fine.
And keep us posted on what's going on, too. I'd like to know how they do.
Let's go to Kay in the North Hills. Hey, Kay.
Good morning. I have Brandywine tomatoes. They're lovely plants. They're not real tall or anything. They're as tall as my tomato baskets. They look very stocky, and they're nice plants, and I have no blooms. Do you know what's going on?
What when you look at the plant, is it real dark green and going crazy, or is it the normal color?
No, it's normal, and it's not going crazy. It's a nice plant.
Should have blossoms on it by now.
Yeah, I mean, Brandywines.
They're really late plants, but should have blossoms by now.
I have volunteer plants that I planted against the fence. I'm tying them up. They're probably going to be little cherry tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
They have blooms on, and they have little tomatoes on.
Yeah, I mean, Brandywines are sort of one of the reasons a lot of people don't like to plant those big, late heirloom tomatoes is because they take forever to set fruit and for that fruit to grow big enough and to ripen. But by now, they definitely should have flowers.
Sometimes they put on flowers, and when we have that hot spell, they'll just drop them. That happens too.
But here's another case. I wouldn't give up on the plant. We still have plenty of gardening season left. I would just carefully watch it. Maybe, you know, definitely don't fertilize with any more nitrogen. But you could do a fertilizer with a little higher number of phosphorus, which would maybe help generate some new blooms.
Okay.
Okay?
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Gracie in Fayette City. Hey, Gracie, good morning.
Good morning. I have two tomato-related questions. The first one is, I received my 3945 seeds, and I would like to store them for next year. What would be the best way to store them? And the second question is, my potato top tomato plants are doing wonderfully. They have lots of tomatoes on them, but just before the tomatoes start to ripen out, they get this black spot that rots out on the bottom.
All right, let's start off with the 3945 tomato. The 3945 tomato is one that I've been giving away. It was found on the battlefield during World War II. And so whenever we're storing seeds, we have to remember that they're living organisms. So we want them, first off, to be dry. Dry and cool would be better, and then dry, cool, and dark would be wonderful. And so the way I store them is I put them in a mason jar. In the mason jar, I put the stuff in there called silica gel, which keeps everything dry and absorbs any extra moisture. And then I just put that down in the basement. That's how I store mine. But you don't want that. You don't want that seed to react to the humidity in the air. You want it in a controlled place. So, and then I don't like to put them in the fridge. I think it's too cold for them. And so I think they'll be fine if you just put them in a mason jar with a little silica gel, and you can get a packet or even a little bit at a craft store. When I did it, I had a ton of mason jars. And so I got a big thing from the craft store of silica gel and just put it in the bottom, and that just keeps them dry. And what you're experiencing with the potato top tomato is called blossom end rot. And so that's a calcium deficiency, but usually the calcium's in the ground. It's just that the plant can't uptake it if we don't have enough rain.
I'm wondering, are you growing those in a container by chance?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Why.
That's the problem.
So you're not watering your containers consistently and evenly. So if you have periods of dry where your plants go through, they can't uptake the calcium in the soil, and therefore they end up with that blossom end rot. So you need to do a better job watering those containers deeply and thoroughly.
I water them every day.
Yeah, but do you go out there and splash and dash where you're just getting them a little bit wet and you're walking away?
Like, you got to really...
No, they're usually getting about a gallon of water.
Oh, if you're having a full-size Brandywine tomato, they need about 3 to 4 gallons, and I'd rather have you do that about 3 times a week. Or if it's super hot, then do it every day. But you need to let that water flush through the pot.
The good news is that usually it's early tomatoes that get the blossom end rot. And when we catch it and be sure that soil stays evenly moist, you'll be okay as the next tomatoes that come along and the next tomatoes that are on there. So that's the important thing, is keeping that. I know you're giving it the water you think it needs, but it obviously needs more water. It's telling you that by showing you in the tomatoes the blossom end rot.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Dan in McCandless. Hey, Dan.
Hey, gentlemen, ladies. I have the same problem. I put 5-gallon buckets. I started Marzano plum tomatoes, and what I'm doing, I'm getting that black rot, but on the bottom stem, where it's touching the soil, about 3 inches up, there's barnacles, you know? And it's like a yellow, puffy look, right?
Yep.
So first off, plum tomatoes in containers, that's the perfect storm for blossom end rot. Plum tomatoes are susceptible, more susceptible than most other tomatoes. A 5-gallon bucket, you know, that's what we say is the bare minimum for soil. Same thing with that. You know, you really have to soak them and keep that soil evenly moist. But the barnacles
are not barnacles at all. They're adventitious root nodes. So close to the base of a tomato, a lot of times they will, because they're so close to the soil, they'll feel like they have to develop some extra roots off of those. And those are called adventitious roots. And so sometimes you'll get those little bumps and nodes around the base of the plant. They're absolutely nothing to worry about. They make it look a little gnarly, but they're nothing to worry about at all.
Okay, yeah, I know I have to water them a lot. I can't believe how much water they take.
Yes, yeah. In a 5-gallon bucket, and a lot of times people think when it rains out that their containers got watered, but it didn't,
right?
Because a lot of times it bounces off the foliage and rolls off. So you have to get out there even when it rains with your hose and water. And those 5-gallon buckets for a container that small, you will have to be watering every day when it's hot.
Yeah, and especially when those roots really get going, they're going to eat up that water quick.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, what are you two doing in the trib of late? Jess, you begin.
Writing about all kinds of good stuff with gardening, of course. Yeah, increasing the yields in your vegetable garden, succession planting, which means all those crops that go in now. And also, I just recently had an article about tomatoes. So today, tomatoes seem to be the hot topic always this time of year. So it was just sort of some tips for maximizing your harvest.
And I was writing about the pollinator garden at the zoo.
Oh, cool.
Which is a very amazing garden. And about Peggy M. Montgomery's American Beauty's Native Plants, which are also great for pollinators, and they have a really cool butterfly. We can't call it butterfly weed anymore.
Okay.
We have to change the name to butterfly flower.
Okay. Yeah,
so that people will grow it. Butterfly weed is this great perennial with these orange flowers that brings in lots of pollinators. She has one called Hello Yellow, instead of the orange, you know, you always want something a little bit different.
Yep.
You know, I was actually out in the woods for a couple of days and I saw lots of butterfly flower out in the field, but a yellow one would be kind of cool.
Would be very cool.
All right, Doug, tell them what you got coming up.
Well, I'll be speaking this week. On Thursday, I'm going to be out at the Donegal Community Center at the Laurel Highlands Senior Lifestyle Show from 11 to 3 p.m., speaking at 12 noon for 15 minutes. I'll be doing my 10 greatest garden tips in 15 minutes.
All right, so you got a minute and a half for each tip.
Yeah.
All right.
And then answering your gardening questions. It's Thursday, 11 to 3, Donegal Community Center, and I have lots of free seeds to give away there. Then on Saturday at 11 o'clock, I'll be at Osterling's Lawn and Garden Center in Butler. Be there for a couple hours, too, talking about summer garden maintenance. Come on out and see me. We'll have a lot of fun.
I'll be appearing in my garage this afternoon if anybody wants to stop by.
Are you going to have like the big fry daddy out there making up some fried shrimp or something?
No.
Oh, okay.
I can't afford either. All right.
It's hot dogs.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Listen, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDK.com.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Is Radio 1020 KDKA.
Hey, let's start off this half hour by taking the 10th caller to win an incredible $25 gift certificate from Janoski's, coming off their successful wine festival yesterday. It is 412-922-1020.
And now it's time for Talking Trees, a service of the Davey Tree Expert Company.
We're joined by Miles Stevens from Davey Tree. And if you have any garden or tree questions, give us a call, 866-391-1020. Well, Miles, let's talk insects to start with. We're going to talk insects and diseases today. And, of course, always before we come on the air, we're picking your brain about what's going on. So what are you seeing out there?
Well, I've talked there before, you know, some like bagworms on like arborvitae and those type of things. You know, there's a lot of hemlock woolly adelgid.
So let's, for both of those, what do we do? What do you guys do?
Well, at this point with bagworms, some are so mature, you know, trying to do some sort of insect treatment is not going to be real practical. Small enough plant, old-fashioned way, go pick them off the plant. You know, that's what you're going to have to do there.
And I've got plenty of hemlock woolly adelgid.
Right. So with those, right now, you could do a foliar spray, but you know, might incline more towards the fall, do a horticultural oil treatment on that. And otherwise, do, you know, some cultural things to try to help out the hemlocks, you know, and just clean up prune broken branches, maybe even water and fertilize later on, just try to make them healthier. Fortunately, I think with hemlock woolly adelgid, catch it early on, it can be turned around, and if you just sort of keep the plant healthier, it's going to do a lot better for you.
And you had mentioned a surprise pest that you've been seeing a lot of on willows, which are usually a pretty pest-resistant plant.
Yeah, seeing mites, which is, you know, unusual. I've never seen mites on willows before.
So what would people look for if they have a willow and they're concerned about it?
If you look at the foliage, and if, you know, instead of being like a solid green color, you see like stippling, looks like little, you know, light dots all the way through and starting at the base of the leaf, then it moves on out, and you see a sort of almost sort of speckled look to it. And to see them, you could tap, you take a white piece of paper and tap the branch or leaf over that, and you'll see dots running around.
Because they're super, super tiny.
Yeah. If you have hand lens, they have a magnifying glass. You want to have some fun, go take a look at them. But you can find them that way, too. But that's, I've seen that on several properties. And that was sort of unusual. But yeah. It's been an unusual weather year, so who knows what.
Yeah, and that leads to unusual pest and disease problems as well. So in the first segment, Doug and I were talking about oak wilt and how he has recently found that on his property. And you're seeing a lot of that out in the field, too. But then you also mentioned one that hasn't cropped up too often for us lately, which is Dutch elm disease. But you're seeing that this year as well.
Right. And typically we start seeing that in June when the first time we get some really hot, dry weather. No, it hasn't been dry lately, but the first time it gets really hot, because what happens is Dutch elm disease, as it progresses, it blocks the tree's ability to move fluids back and forth. And long year of cool, wet conditions, a lot of time you don't see it. As soon as it gets hot and dry, all of a sudden you'll see, you know, branches dying out, and not widespread yet, you know, and there are not as many elms there used to be, but I have been seeing that the last month.
So it'll be sort of like one branch will start to die back and wilt, and then maybe it'll spread to another branch. So if you're seeing that, definitely give Davey a call.
Yeah, it's like, because what happens is the death occurs so rapidly, the tree can't, you know, leaves can't go through normal leaf abscission, so they sort of hang on the tree and they droop down and hang there and turn brown. You know, they'll drop eventually, but initially it is wilt and hang there on there.
So how much oak wilt are you seeing out there?
Seeded out there, scattered. You know, certain areas you'll see a lot, other areas you won't. But we are seeing oak wilt out there. People, you know, so it looks like fall. My tree's dropping leaves all over the place. You go out there, and you'll see a lot of leaf drop. And I always say, it reminds me like you look at a leaf. It looks like somebody like it got burned with acid. Half of it will be like brown. Then it'll be this. You'll see this marginal area where it's sort of somewhere in between. It'll be green. But the main thing is it starts. You know, symptom people are probably going to see it's like abnormally a large amount of leaf drop at that point in time.
And we were talking during the break about the companies coming through right now pruning, and they're saying it's okay to prune oaks now, and they're pruning the electric lines and things like that. If somebody comes and says, hey, can we do some tree pruning, and you have oaks on your property, a little alarm bell should go off on your head. That person doesn't know what they're talking about, right?
They absolutely should not be pruning oaks right now. This is prime time for oak wilt disease. Another thing you have to worry about too, you know, these folks come through and, you know, even if they've been removing some dead oaks that may have been dying oak wilt, hopefully make sure they've sanitized their tools before they come out, you know, later on in the season and do some pruning for you in the oaks. You know, tool sanitation is important. But somebody comes around and says, don't worry about it. We don't have a problem with oak wilt around here. Well, they're wrong. I'm not going to say it's widespread in every home and every neighborhood, but it's out there, and they should absolutely not be pruning oaks right now under circumstances.
If you have 4 acres of red oaks, what do you do when you get oak wilt?
Get rid of the diseased trees. It's sort of a toughie there because you end up with some root grafting. You know, so if you have an area that you're seeing a lot of it, you may try to isolate that area. And you can do some trenching. You also can do some, there are trunk-injected fungicides you can use. The recommendation is there is to, the trees on the perimeter that are not infected would be to treat those with a fungicide and then do the trenching. If you do the trenching first, because what have you had that root grafting, the roots get cut. Water sort of been grafted in there, the tree sort of sucks it up. Well, if the oak wilt is there, it's going to take that up. So you want to do the fungicide first, then do the trenching.
Interesting. So. See, that's why we rely on these great arborists at Davey Tree, because they know all those smart little tips and tricks like that, right?
What is the prognosis if you had a big forest with red oak like that?
Asking just for a friend, right? You're just asking for a friend.
You know, am I going to lose all my red oaks eventually?
Not necessarily. I mean, you'll see an area come in, you'll have oak wilt, and then, you know, I don't say it just sort of stops, but it sort of slows down, doesn't develop anymore. Went to a discussion, you know, years ago, actually the city parks had a thing, and they brought in a couple folks had done a lot of research, and one was a professor from WVU. That was her specialty. It was oak wilt. Interesting thing with oak wilt is that it's always there, but it's basically the same acreage every year that it is infected or dies. It doesn't go from 100 acres to 500 to 10,000. It's like it's always there, but it's the same amount of area like every year. So it's just something that's always present. And for whatever reason, conditions get ideal, it spreads, and then maybe for whatever reason, even that area, it just sort of, you know, sort of peters out, and then conditions are not as ideal. There's not the root grafting. There's not the beetle that carries it moving as active as much or whatever, and it slows down. But it's not like
like chestnut blight, where it's going to wipe out everything.
It's not that type of thing. It's like you'll have it, and then you won't have that activity.
But it will kill the tree before. So,
well, the one thing for sure I'm doing is removing the two trees that we believe were in. Well, one we know for sure is infected. Mm-hmm. There's one next to it that looks like it might have died last year that I didn't notice. You know, you don't see them all the time in the forest. So I'm going to get those two out, and then you have to remove the wood. You know how cheap I am. I always have them just cut the tree and leave it there. Great. Yeah. Now I got to get rid of the wood, too.
You want to get that off site,
Yeah, that's one thing you got to do it right, especially when you live in a
Then after
forest.
That, we'll have to see what we're going to treat and what we're going to trench and what we're going to cut.
You got some job ahead of you there, and Davey's going to have a big job ahead
of him. Yes, I know.
It's not going to be easy.
No, it's not one of our favorite things to do either. In reality, it's part of the business to do the removals. But you hate when you go out and you have some nice mature trees and, you know, things have happened. You got to remove them. That's the we do it, but it's not necessarily the fun part of the job. Tree preservation is a whole lot more interesting.
Well, listen, for more information about Davey Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, you can go to davey.com/KDKA. And don't forget, you can always call the experts at Davey Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733.
Going to get back to your phone calls. And if you have a tree question, Mal's going to hang around for the rest of the show. Give him a call, 866-391-1020.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Biz Radio 1020 KDKA.
All right, let's get back to the phones and let's say hi to Jean calling today from Washington. Hey, Jean, how are you? Welcome to the Organic Gardeners.
Good. Good morning. I have a mature red maple tree. It's probably 30 years old, and it is starting to lose some of its leaves. Is that normal?
Well, first off, Miles, it's the same age as you are. It's only 30 years old.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy. I don't know what to say about that one.
What do you think it is?
Well, it could be a couple things. One, you know, like I said, we've had a lot of rain, but there's been some heat, so you get some leaf drop. One thing I've been seeing with red maple is they get a disease called tar spot. And you'll see little round circles on the leaves, and that can cause some foliar drop. I've seen a little bit of anthracnose disease also on red maple, and what you'll see at times, they'll drop some leaves from that. You'll see some browning along the veins of the leaves, and that could be an indication there's some anthracnose going on there too.
But neither one of those are fatal in a single season, right? Like trees will randomly get a disease one season, and then the next year they'll be just fine.
Right, especially at the tar spot. That tends to be more of an aesthetic type thing than anything else. It's not gonna kill the tree.
And a 30-year-old maple is a tough tree.
Right, tough tree. And even with the anthracnose, especially in red maple, unless it's really severe, it could be a reaction. The weather has been crazy this year, you know, not much of a winter. A lot of rain early on in the spring, great for some disease, you know, to form. It may not be anything that's very fatal to the tree. You know, occasionally we do see verticillium wilt, but, you know, you have to inspect the tree to see that. You know, probably should have somebody else take a look at that.
Some of the leaves are red that are falling off.
Yeah, well, then, you know, once again, that may not be anything in particular. The other thing I'd be thinking about and would be that sometimes, you know, red maples do get like girdling root also.
Yep.
And so be worthwhile. You know, if you dig around the base of the tree, you know, you think the root should always radiate out. And occasionally dig around the base of the tree, you'll see the roots are like wrapping around the trunk of the tree.
You know, with these tree issues, though, really the best way to identify what the problem is, we can guess, but just to have somebody like you, like a certified arborist, come look at it.
Right, exactly. I mean, we may be looking at something that's absolutely no concern at all, you know, and you know, but on the other hand, there may be some issues like the girdling root, then, or some things you may want to have somebody come out and take a look at it and, you know, put your mind at ease.
So here's the Davey number again. You can call them, they'll come out and take a look at it. It's 855-982-TREE.
All right, let's go to Slippery Rock and say good morning to Marion. Hey, Marion, welcome to KDKA.
Hi, thank you. I'm a little off topic here, but I had a question about the wren boxes and the wasps.
to help with the cabbage moss. I was wondering exactly where you place your boxes and how big the hole size is in the box.
Sure. So what she's referring to is how I control the cabbage worms in my garden, which, you know, are those little green worms that get on the broccoli and the cabbage and kale and every member of that broccoli family. And I do that by hanging up a few wren houses in my vegetable garden. And I do two. My garden is about 30 by 35, 40, something like that. And I have two wren boxes, and both boxes are filled with little wrens. And the
So are they actual boxes, or are they like the hanging feeder?
They're hanging
boxes.
They're hanging boxes, and I have them about, probably about 8 feet, 8-10 feet up off of the ground. And I'm trying to think of the right hole size for a wren.
I'm looking that up, so keep talking.
I think it's 3/4 of an inch, but the Audubon Society makes one specific for wrens. I have one that I made myself out of a cedar plank that is a wren. And off the top of my head, I don't know the exact size. Doug's looking it up right now for a wren, but I want to say it's 3/4 of an inch, but I could be wrong.
Mine are the hanging 1 1/8 inches, it says here.
1 1/8.
Floor
okay.
size wrens for the wren's house has an entry hole dimension of 1 1/8 inches, but I have like the hanging kind of like a gourd style.
Okay.
And every year I get wrens,
yep.
You know, a couple times a year, don't they?
Yeah, they have multiple broods per year. And they're one of the best birds for encouraging pest eating in the vegetable garden.
Oh, there's nothing like sitting underneath that little house.
Yep.
And after the babies are in there and hear them sing for their supper.
Right.
You know, and seeing both parents actually come back and seeing everything that they have in their mouths. It's just amazing. What you have a fact about, not wrens, but chickadees.
Yep.
Do you remember how many?
Yeah, Doug Tallamy, who's a professor of entomology at University of Delaware, and he wrote a great book called Bringing Nature Home. And they did some studies on how many caterpillars a chickadee family needs to raise a single brood of baby chickadees. And it was 6,000 caterpillars. So these birds do an incredible job of gleaning everything from gypsy moth and eastern tent caterpillars and all types of little caterpillars off of plants to feed them to their young. So encouraging them to take up residence in the garden is obviously a very good thing.
What kind of a wren are they?
These are the ones that I have in my house. When I was growing up, we used to call them Jenny wrens, but around here people call them house wrens.
I think you can also get a Carolina wren, right?
Yep, Carolina wrens.
Okay.
But they're just little birds. They have an upturned tail, and they're a little brown, and they
hop
around.
Beautiful song.
Yep.
Oh, great. And the wasps, do you know what kind of wasps they are and what kind of habitat they would like?
Yep. So the wasps that also eat, I should post that video I took on Facebook, too. The wasps, also those brown paper wasps that people also call them hornets, they build the big papery nests up in the trees.
Oh, okay.
They are the ones that also, every day, they're flying around my cabbage plants and my Brussels sprouts and broccoli, and they to eat those cabbage worms. They cut them into pieces. You can watch them do it if you stand in the garden long enough, and fly the pieces piece by piece back to the nest to put it in the brood chamber to raise their young. Now, obviously, don't go near the nest of the adult ones, but
if you really want to get a good look,
get
your magnifying glass
don't
out.
Don't listen to him.
Sometimes just cutting open the nest.
No. Oh, don't even. That you're just a liability waiting to happen there. But yeah, just leave them be. Give them plenty of room, but just don't disturb them when they're doing their stuff in the garden, because they really are beneficial.
Do any other kind of wasps do it? Just the big paper.
Also, what we call here in Pittsburgh, we call ground bees, which are yellow jackets, which are a different type of paper wasp that builds their nest in the ground. So they have a papery nest, but it's inside of an old burrow, you know, insect or animal burrow in the ground. They also feed their young lots of different insects. So they're, again, very, very good for the garden. Just obviously stay away from the entry hole and don't run the lawnmower.
You know, we were talking last week about bald-faced hornets. Steve Rapaski was on.
Okay.
And the thing that always amazes me, you know, when I'm fishing in a kayak and everything, you don't never see the nest until the leaves fall.
Right.
And then you're like, wow, I was going by that every day. And as long as you don't bother them, you'd always rather see the nest up higher than lower, but as long as you don't bother them, they won't bother you.
They do become a slightly aggressive in the autumn, though, and that's because they're trying to protect the queen. The fertilized queens are the only ones that survive the winter. That nest is used once and then completely abandoned. So if you have one of those nests way up high in a tree, leave it intact. Don't try to remove it if it's, you know, not bothering you. They will all die in the winter, except for the fertilized queen, but then she will not build a new colony. They're territorial. So leaving that old nest up will prevent somebody else the next year from moving in that specific area to build a new one. So you have to be, you know, be smart about it. Stay away from them.
Yes,
but
Steve has some scary stories about bald-faced hornets.
This
and
what,
about
that's what
hornets
he does for
general.
A living, yeah.
Some wasps can spit their venom and all sorts of crazy stuff like that. Yeah, like
he was going for the drama.
Oh yeah, and multiple bites. What's scarier, bald-faced hornets or yellow jackets? I say bald-faced hornets.
I say yellow jackets because you don't know the nest is there sometimes in the ground until you walk right on top of it.
We had a kid in the neighborhood named Rocco who was pretty scary, folks. All right, 866
391. Did they call him the hornet?
Yes, they did. And he could sting. All right, 866-391-1020, dollar bank, instant access, kdk.com.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Biz Radio 1020 KDKA.
Well, we would like to thank Miles Stevens from the Davy Tree Company for joining us today. Lots of incredibly wonderful information about tree care, as is always an important topic, especially this time of year.
I'll be out on the road this week. Thursday, I'll be at the Laurel Highlands Senior Lifestyle Show from 11 to 3. I'll be speaking at 12 noon and then answering garden questions. That's at the Donegal Community Center on Thursday. And then Saturday, I'll be up in Butler at Osterling's Lawn and Garden, talking about summer garden maintenance. Would love to see you. Come on out on Thursday. Actually, I got some free seeds to give away, so we'll have some fun there. And this rain has been something. There's been no, I haven't had to water my containers only once this year, which is a first. The plants are going crazy, along with the weeds. Lots of fungal diseases, as we heard talking tomatoes the early part of the show. But I would take this over a drought any day.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And every gardening season has its challenges, whether they're drought or water-related or insect-related. You just got to roll
or
with
diseases.
The punches. You just got to roll with the punches and do your best to get yourself through the troublesome times. But I think overall, at least for me, so far, it's been a pretty good gardening season. I'm still waiting to pick my first ripe tomato. I don't even have a cherry tomato yet.
I've been picking a couple different ones. I think the one.
Cheat.
No, a chocolate cherry. Actually, I didn't cheat. That was a normal one. My cheaters, I don't know, cheaters haven't put on tomatoes. They actually buy a lot of those cheaters and they've succumbed to fungal diseases. They're really slowed down because they were in so early.
Right, right. What are you going to do?
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.